This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Tom, Serena and Brandy with you this morning in a flood-tastic episode of the show. Unsurprisingly, what have we done this morning? Well, we have checked in with Cafu, the fuel fairy, to find out what they're facing when it comes to getting petrol around the place, because so many people were asking us about fueling up this morning. We've also been looking at the business of stuck cars, and I speak as someone who got dropped off by a friend last night who promptly then got stuck in my neighbourhood, for which I feel incredibly guilty. So we've checked in with a car repair service this morning in Al Quds to find out what they're seeing in terms of stuck motors. And to get a bit of advice, we've been speaking to Anjana Pindoria. She's the owner of QuickPro. We've also been getting a little bit of insurance advice from Anand Singh. He's Senior Counsel for Transport and Insurance at Al Tamimi & Co. And we spoke to one man this morning who's, and this is a little bit left field, but stay with me, flooring tiles could help mapping services to figure out where there are floods and therefore road closures. Lawrence Campbell-Cook is CEO and founder of Pavagen. They're opening their Dubai office as I speak.
Challenging morning on the roads, challenging morning for many planning their routes, be that by metro, be that by car, by public transport, or of course, by air as well. But thank you all for your great advice and your great input as well. A lot of people texting in to give people ideas of how they can get from A to B. There's been a few question marks about getting from Dubai to Abu Dhabi today from a number of our listeners. Somebody texting in this one saying route to Abu Dhabi via detour by Jebel Ali, bypassing stretch up by parks and resorts. Route reconnects just by border, then route up so far over border is smooth. Abu Dhabi side. Thank you for that one. This one from Mark, who's been in touch with us. Abu Dhabi. Right, made it. Villanova, Global Village, Al Nahyan, through Expo, Expo Road, Jebel Ali Port, out the other side by Jebel Ali Beach Hotel, along a small coast road adjacent to Palm Jebel Ali. Thank you, security, for letting cars through. Out at last exit by Gantoot. Easy cruise from there. Nobody on the road. HQ building arrived. Al Rahar Beach, 1 hour, 45 minutes. Not sure of the journey home, but have a great day. Mark, thank you very much indeed. Detailed, to say the least. Meanwhile, a lot of others getting involved. Thank you very much indeed to Aberfan also getting involved, saying, due to the unprecedented weather conditions, instead of encouraging remote working or learning, giving public holidays for at least 3 days would have created much less chaos on the roads. Yep, not going to disagree with that one, but there we go. Meanwhile, let's get some more input into what you can and can't expect. There has been a few questions throughout the course of this morning about the accessibility of fuel for your cars. I certainly was victim of this yesterday. Went to two forecourts yesterday on my long, exaggerated journey home looking for a top-up, and the pumps were bare.
Well, we are joined now by the fuel fairy on the line. Ryan Rogers is the COO of Cafu. Ryan, good morning. How are you going?
Good morning. Well, thank you. I think, well, just about the same as everybody else, trying to make the best of a bad situation. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, before we actually speak about your logistical situation with getting fuel to people, I understand you've got an interesting situation for yourself right now.
That's true, yes. I'm just trying to get a fridge. We're out of power at my house, so yes. All the food is defrosting and the kids are getting a little bit upset. So yes, just trying to get by.
Right. Well, we won't take too much of your time, but we do appreciate you finding the time to speak to us. Tell us, what are you facing when it comes to getting your fuel trucks out there and to people?
Yeah, so I think just like so many businesses, we've had to suspend our operations just for the safety of everybody and our pilots and our trucks. We're actually looking to resume operations today. And I think, as you're aware, we serve both B2B and B2C businesses. So not only the apps, but also many other businesses. So, so yes, we're looking to resume today as soon as the roads are passable and in a safe condition to be able to resume on. Yep.
So you haven't had any Cafu trucks on the road for how long?
We have had some where the roads were able to be passed, but for the last 2 days, 3 days, we've really scaled back our operations, suspending it completely several times, particularly during the storms, because obviously that's just an unsafe position for anybody to be out in. Yeah.
What does, let's start with the B2C, the delivery to individuals, to customers. What are you seeing in terms of demand coming into your app? What are people actually asking for?
We have a lot of demand coming through the app. I think, as you mentioned, there are limitations into the existing fixed infrastructure. We know that road tankers are really restricted and unable to pass through some of the locations. And fortunately, our little trucks are able to be in communities where there is accessibility, and so we're able to serve those B2C customers. We have restricted the availability on the app to only those locations that we are able to serve. So we just advise our customers that if they don't see an available slot right now, just keep checking back, because we are opening up more and more locations as the conditions improve.
What about the ability for you to get fuel yourself?
So me personally?
No, the business. I mean, and you, Ryan, but to fuel your trucks up.
Yeah, so we similarly have the distribution network that the other gas stations use. We all take fuel from the same locations. But we're quite fortunate in terms of our storage capability. So we have some continuity of our operations for several days. So we're able to leverage that logistics supply chain in our storage and be able to continue to serve customers.
Okay, so what does it mean for your B2B customers, the businesses that you are contracted to?
So I think most of the businesses have similarly been affected. So many of them have not required fuel because they have been unable to serve customers as well. So ourselves, as the road conditions continue to improve and they are able to resume back to work, then as are we, and we are working with all of those customers to be able to resume operations for them.
Okay, so where are you serving at the moment, just so people know?
I think it's a very dynamic situation. I think the best situation and the advice I can give everybody is just to look on the app. We're constantly updating it, and as soon as those areas come available, then they'll be open.
Okay, and what, hoping to get it back up and running as the roads clear?
Absolutely, yes. And today we would expect a much fuller resumption of our services.
Ryan, thank you very much for your time this morning. Good luck finding the fridge. Ryan Rogers is the COO of CAFU, talking to us about the challenges that they face in terms of operating as a fuel delivery service.
No shortage of challenges out there at the moment. No shortage of advice, including advice for passengers heading to and from the airport. We spoke to Paul Griffiths a little earlier on, CEO of Dubai Airports.
Make sure that the flight you are planning to join is actually scheduled to depart when you think it is, and then please go to the airport no more than 2 hours at the absolute maximum. 90 minutes is probably a good report time to make sure that you minimize your time at the airport.
SK, any updates from the airports themselves, or the airlines for that matter?
Yeah, a bit of both. So Dubai International Airport, they've resumed arriving flights of airlines operating out of Terminal 1, but they have said access to DXB Terminal 1 strictly limited to passengers with confirmed departures. So of course, that off the back of Paul Griffiths' message there, just saying do not head to the airport unless you have a confirmed flight or booking, and obviously checking with your airlines. A few things to note, they've said rebooking facilities not available on site, and passengers on flights that have been diverted, arrangements are being made to get them either back to DXB or to disembark at an alternative location within the region. So not forgetting Abu Dhabi Zayed International Airport, they have said that they are fully operational. In reference to airlines, Emirates Airlines saying they've extended the suspension of check-in for passengers leaving Dubai until at least 9 a.m. today. Obviously, we're past that time slot now, but I know Brandy got confirmation on that. It's basically if your flight is from 11 a.m. onwards this morning, then you should be okay. But they're just saying that only those with confirmed bookings after this time will be able to check in.
What about cars? We have got a number of abandoned cars by the side of the road. A little earlier on, we spoke to Anjana Pinduria, who is the owner of Quick Pro, the car repair garage based out of Alkuz. This was her advice.
So you can contact your insurance and arrange for recovery. However, the wait time is very long. As you can imagine, everyone is overwhelmed. So what we're doing is providing a recovery service to a safe space. So yesterday, most of the cars were taken either to home garages or side roads where they could be parked, and then they would contact their insurance to figure out what would happen. We did have a few scenarios yesterday where insurance have said no, that it's not going to be covered, which has left the owners in a bit of a predicament. And next steps would be to take their cars from their park spaces to the workshop and assess what the repairs would be.
What are the police saying?
Yeah, so off the back of that, Dubai Police requesting vehicle owners to please relocate parked vehicles from the roads and remove them just as quickly as possible. They've shared the statement on their social saying it's to ensure the smooth traffic flow across the Emirates. Many residents across the UAE, as we've seen, had to abandon cars and vehicles on the roads due to that heavy rainfall on Tuesday. But drivers in need of support and assistance, you can contact the call centre 901 for Dubai Police.
And just very quickly, Dubai Metro, what you got for us?
So the last update was from yesterday. The RTA, we've been reaching out to the authorities. They're saying, please stay across our socials, obviously, because they're inundated and really busy. But they're saying some of the stations, red and green lines, have resumed operations and they're still providing those shuttle buses, feeder buses to transport passengers where they can.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Right, many people obviously are suffering at the hands of the storm that we all were suffering, that afflicted the country a couple of days ago. We're still seeing the knock-on effects of that. One organisation that I'm sure has been working throughout the days and nights since then is Quick Pro Auto Services, a British family-owned garage aiming to provide honest and transparent services focused on customer service. They're one of a number of companies that are helping car owners out there at the moment. The owner of Quick Pro Car Repair Garage in Alkuz is Anjana Pinduria, who joins us now. Anjana, thanks so much indeed for your time. Thanks for joining us. I can imagine that you're very busy at the moment.
It's been definitely a busy last 24 hours, yeah.
Let's talk. Okay, two elements to this one. One, you helping others, and two, you at Quick Pro helping yourself. You're in Alkuz. We know that Alkuz has been afflicted, has been heavily affected as well. How's the garage?
We're fortunate. Our garage is on a slight hill, so we've not had any floods directly. However, our neighbours and roads opposite have been completely flooded. There were some workshops in 2 metres of water. So in and out was just completely impossible.
Which is extraordinary. You know, you think of the nature of a business of garages as well. If you start getting flooded, that is a massive headache for business owners.
It's an absolute headache, especially with equipment. And then the same, I'm sure everyone's facing, repairs, maintenance, and just our business as a whole. We can't use it. We can't do anything.
That's your home. That's where you want to get the car.
Correct.
So you can sort them out for your customers as well. How easy is it been to get the cars to the garage? That seems to have been an issue.
It's not been easy. Yesterday, our focus was primarily helping people get to a safer space. I think we've had, yesterday we had about 40 cars contact us just to tow them off the roads where they've been stuck and move them to a safe space before they contact insurance and figure out what the next steps are. And I think that's been a stress factor for a lot of people. And we expect costs of repairs are going to be very high.
Let's give people that scenario, because I suppose there are so many elements there. So say someone has got their car stuck in the water, or they've had to abandon their car because of water damage on the side of the road. What's the next? Do they call you guys directly, or do they need to call a recovery person first?
So you can contact your insurance and arrange for recovery. However, the wait time is very long. As you can imagine, everyone is overwhelmed. So what we're doing is providing a recovery service to a safe space. So yesterday, most of the cars were taken either to home garages or side roads where they could be parked, and then they would contact their insurance to figure out what would happen. We did have a few scenarios yesterday where insurance have said no, that it's not going to be covered, which has left the owners in a bit of a predicament. And next steps would be to take their cars from their park spaces to the workshop and assess what the what the repairs would be.
Well, on what circumstances were the insurance been saying no? What have people told you?
Some policies have stated in clauses that if you were driving in your car at the time of a natural disaster and you've driven through water, it's not covered. If it's parked at home, there are scenarios where it is covered.
And in terms of the damage that we're seeing, I mean, it might sound like a simplistic question here, but water damage, I suppose, comes in so many guises as well. Is that the main sort of concern we're seeing, that cars have just been flooded?
They've been flooded beyond repair. If you have a car that's submerged a meter in water, that's all your electronic systems out of work. They will not work. And to dry and try and do repair and maintenance on something of that sort of damage is impossible.
So is that equivalent to an insurance write-off?
It's an insurance write-off.
Despite the fact there might not be any sort of outward damage or anything like that, the internal damage
Correct.
Is enough to make an insurance write-off.
Especially the newer cars that are obviously primarily focused on the electrics. You've obviously got the EV cars. We've got Teslas that are going to be submerged. What can they do to repair it? There's not much you can do if the components completely go. Then it's beyond repair.
And when it comes to, I mean, obviously we've seen the EV revolution recently. A lot more cars now are hybrid or of course they're electric as well. I mean, I'm trying to put two and two together and coming up with 16, but one would assume they're not sort of made for the conditions we've seen in the last few days.
They are definitely not made for the conditions.
And you've seen the results of that.
We've seen the results, yeah. We rescued a Tesla yesterday from our community where I live, actually. It was a neighbour who was stuck. The team came out, moved him to a safe space. He's contacted his insurance, but he was driving through the water. It's unfortunate. It was a puddle he couldn't miss. And his insurance have told him that it's not covered. It's an older model he bought secondhand. What does he do? His options are now to seek personal repairs to see if he can get it back on the road. But it's a fully electric car. What will happen?
Because you've pointed out there that people aren't willfully driving through the water for fun. If the road goes left and you can only turn left, that's where you are.
That's where you are. And that's something that you'd have to contest with your insurance companies.
The other question I've got is a lot of, you know, people will go, yeah, but I'm on warranty, so that'll sort it out as well. But I'm assuming, given the number of cars that are affected and the manufacturers themselves, there's going to be a wait and there's going to be question marks about warranties, aren't there?
Correct. If you read the terms and conditions, they will catch you out in certain situations. So warranty will cover you to a certain point, but that's not going to repair your car and get back on the road.
Mm. What about you and the team at QuickPro? I mean, obviously, no one is celebrating what's gone on, etc. You're out there to help as many people as you can, but you've got your limits as well. I mean, if you could open 40 garages today, I'm sure you could fill them with the demand out there. But are you working at limits at the moment?
We are working at limits at the moment, yes. But we have a partnership with about 20 garages who are not our competition. We partner with them. We send each other work. We reach our point and we say, can you go to this place? They're a recommendation from us. So we are working with other workshops to also do the same because everybody is in the situation. It's not, you know, we want to bring the business to us because we're going to get to a point where we can't help everybody. Purely the repairs and the costs are going to go beyond any person to be able to manage.
What's your advice? I mean, I've got so many questions coming in at the moment with regards to what to do next. A lot of people, as you say, because there's so many moving spinning plates, aren't there, with the insurance, warranties, manufacturers, car repair garages as well. We've got a minute left to do. What's your advice to those that have got cars that need attention?
I would say get it towed to a safe space.
Right.
That would be number one. On my way here, I've seen about 20 cars parked in dangerous positions. If there's high impact cars coming at you, that's going to cause more damage. So step one, get it to a safe space. Once it's in a safe space, contact your insurance and get the advice from them. They are the specialists. They can tell you what to do next. If it gets to a point where insurances can't help you, look for an independent garage that may be able to give you some advice.
Mm. Anjana, thank you so much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for your honest answers as well. I know it's a tough time for you and all the QuickPro team, but we can't thank you enough for helping so many people out at
thank
the moment.
You very much.
Do get in touch with the team at QuickPro if you'd like. Whereabouts is QuickPro?
We're on Alcus 3, just off First Alcal.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We are talking insurance this morning. A lot of concern about what policies will and won't cover, whether it comes to cars, whether it comes to your homes, or whether it comes to businesses. How do you get the insurance company to pay up? Arnaud Singh is senior counsel in the transport insurance business at Altamimi & Co. He has the unenviable job of looking at that for us this morning. Arnaud, good morning.
Morning. Thank you guys for having me here.
How big a deal is this week, insurance-wise?
It's catastrophic. I think that's the only way to put it. It's just going to have far-reaching impact.
How much money could we be talking for insurance companies?
Well, ballpark. Difficult to estimate. Hundreds of millions, certainly.
Where would you expect, from what you've seen so far and from what you're hearing from clients and the like, the bulk of the claims to come from?
So, of course, the maximum hit is on the motor insurance because of all the cars stopping on the roads. And a lot of this is water damage, so we're talking total loss. And a number of these would be luxury vehicles, more on the higher end. And that's going to be the maximum hit.
One of the insurance experts that we've spoken to from the insurance industry themselves has sort of suggested that insurance companies for motors are looking more closely at claims at the moment.
We've had
a couple of rain incidents this year. They're scrutinising things.
Yep.
How easy is it, and this is not the most sophisticated question anyone's asked, but how easy is it to get a motor insurance claim honoured?
So, In a general scenario where you have a claim on the road, incident involving two cars, that's fairly straightforward. But right now with the flood damage, I think a lot of they're getting into a lot of subjectivity. So where the intent is being questioned, whether you knew there was a lot of water, but you still drove into it, and that's being questioned. So I mean, this is a very common principle of insurance that you got to act as if you're uninsured. Right, so you got to protect your property, whether it is motor vehicle, whether it's any other property, as if it is not insured. So you cannot just let it go because you're insured.
But what do you do, though, if an insurance company comes back and contests a claim? What's the next step for someone who doesn't necessarily have a lawyer like you to help them?
Yeah, well, I think it's a number of factors. It'll really depend on why they're rejecting it, but I would say majority of the claims are going to get paid. I don't think they'll be rejecting a lot of claims because it's a scenario. I mean, it's a natural disaster. It's not really a man-made. It's not really come from anybody. You cannot put the blame on anybody in person. Yeah.
Is the advice to push back on insurance companies though if they do query?
Well, I'd be cautious. A lot of them are my clients, but yes, I would say certainly. I mean, again, back to the point that it is dependent on what is really the reason that they're rejecting it. But if you don't see it's a very valid reason, you should push back, certainly.
Let's talk commercial and businesses, because we've all seen videos of mall flooding and the rest of it. Whose insurance pays up there? Is it the mall owner or the shop owner?
So if it's the damage within the shops, it would be the shop owners. It's excluded from the mall's policy. Whereas if for the rest of the mall, it would be coming out of the mall's policy. So there are two layers there, yes.
And again, I mean, we've got small business owners that we're hearing from anecdotally and through the station as well. They need things like roofs to be fixed for things to become fully operational. And cash flow is an issue for small businesses.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, so a lot of them would have something which is called a property or risk policy, which is going to cover them for the damage that has happened and also the business interruption. So that's the other element that whatever disruptions being caused to your business, the insurance ought to cover that monetarily, yes.
So for anyone going through their policies this morning, what kind of words should they be looking for?
One, of course, that flood damage is not excluded, the biggest one, because that's often excluded. And this part of the world, it is not something which was expected. So it's something which might be excluded in certain policies. But other than that, you should be looking at what your deductibles are. If the amounts are less, if the claim is not a big amount, maybe you're not going for the claim. Other conditions, of course, is that you need to, back to the point that you need to act like a prudent insured. So you should be doing, if there is a leakage, you should have tried to stop the leakage rather than just calling up the insurance and saying, look, there's a leakage, I can't do anything about it.
How do you decide whether to file a claim or not?
Again, it'll depend on the quantity and quantum. So if it is a small claim and if it is below the deductible that's on your policy, then rather not claim. If on the business interruption side, if your business got up and running within 24 to 48 hours, most likely the first 48 hours are not covered. So you ought not to claim in that scenario.
The rain incidents are becoming, I can't believe I've just used that as language either, are becoming an awful lot more common. Are we seeing more policies being written to exclude them here now that rain is becoming a thing?
Not necessarily. I think the commercials will change, so the premiums will change. So because these are the things that, these are the actual scenarios for which insurances are made, so you can't exclude all of these. So what could happen is they may say that on property policy, you may have to take an additional endorsement for flood, things like that. But and that will just mean some additional premiums because, of course, this is hitting somebody's P&L, so they've got to cover it somewhere.
Have you already seen a change in the language or in the clauses around rain?
Not yet. And these are more global. So UAE is a very reinsurance-driven market. So if we see similar losses coming across the globe and the cost of claims going up, all over, then this is probably going to be expected. But this is the rain damage is something that's happened globally all those years. So I don't think.
And you're right. I mean, I'm thinking back to Sydney, Australia. I was discussing with someone last night a claim that they had back in Australia for a house for floods over Christmas. You mentioned premiums rising. Could this week's floods cause premiums to rise?
Not immediately, but yes, by the time your renewals come up, possibly because I mean, it'll depend on the amount of losses that come out. And I would imagine, yes, maybe in 8 months or a year from now, the premiums will start going up.
So one event can have that much power?
It is, yes, absolutely. Because especially given the nature of the event and the catastrophic sort of effect it has.
So talk to me about the most common reasons. We've got about 2 minutes left with you that a claim could be rejected and how anyone getting ready to file can try and protect themselves as much as possible against that.
So one is, if you did not take an action which a normal or reasonable person would have taken to protect your property. So in coming back to the car scenario, if there was water and you could see the water and other cars stopped, but you still decided to go in. That's the kind of analogy we're trying to say, that if you intentionally went in and damaged your property, that's something that will be a problem. The other thing is that if you are on a property side, if you're taking an action or let's say you're appointing somebody to do something, do inform your insurers. So inform your brokers, inform your insurers right away, and then do take their consent into consideration before you go ahead.
What do you mean?
So let's say in a scenario where there's a property damage and you decide to bring in a contractor, you should actually inform the insurer that you're bringing in another contractor, because that could, in some certain scenarios, it could increase the risk as well.
Right. So if you're going to go and fix something to just stop a leak, whatever else, tell them you're doing it.
Yes, that's it. They're not going to stop you from doing it, but you just got to tell them, because these are the things which often become the reason why they reject a claim.
Okay, so you don't want to accidentally void it by bringing in someone to stop the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Anand Singh is a senior counsel in the transport insurance business at Al Tamimi & Co. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
From the Abu Dhabi National Exhibition Centre.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8, live on location at the World Future Energy Summit.
The world's leading event for renewable energy and sustainability.
Yeah, speaking of energy, just a small side note, I'm in conversation with the Fuel Fairy at the moment. Cafu, a lot of people asking us about fueling up their cars at the moment with the roads as they are. We are endeavouring, fingers crossed, to have someone from CAFU on the line in about half an hour's time, trying to make that happen for you. In the meantime, the World Future Energy Summit, we are checking in on what's happening, and one company that is launching its UAE branch, as it were, today, that is the smart flooring tech company Pavagen. Lawrence Campbell-Cook is the CEO and founder. Lawrence, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, good morning.
I got to work on foot this morning. My car is currently sandbagged in an underground car park. Your technology means that I could have generated some energy while I made my commute. How does that work?
So when you walk on our floor, it converts your footsteps to electrical power. All you've got to do is walk and imagine how many people walk around malls and today walking to work. And there's a potential to harness a small amount of energy from every step that people make using the PaveGen tile that can be installed inside, outside, in the sun, anywhere that's needed.
So you're actually showing this off at the World Future Energy Summit, and you're going to turn people's footsteps into mangroves. How does that happen?
Yeah, so at the Future Energy Summit, we wanted to show what our technology can really do. And we believe in unlocking the power of every footstep. So when you walk on our floor, some energy is created and a light can come on for around 10 seconds. So one step on our floor will make the light come on. But we want to make more impact. And so what we can do is now we're donating the footstep, the energy from a footstep, to help to plant mangrove trees. Now, when I last checked, it was on around 250 trees. My team have rather optimistically set a challenge of trying to hit 1,000 by the end of today. We're hoping it's going to be busy as the roads unblock from Dubai, as we've just been hearing about.
What is your metric for converting footsteps to mangroves? How many footsteps make up a mangrove? I'm not quite getting the payment bit.
Yeah, so it's around 50 footsteps. And if you walk into the World Future Energy Summit, you will see a triangular floor tile. Okay, so it's around 45 centimeters triangle, a mesh of them all across the floor. And when you make 50 steps on our tile, you'll see the mangrove growing on a screen, the tree. And at the end of the 50, it will get a message. And then we also are making a donation alongside the partners, World Future Energy Summit, to ensure that each tree is actually planted. So we're doing good for the world from something as simple as walking. And I think the average person makes around 150 million steps in their lifetime. And so imagine if every step you took could make a difference during your commute and as you walk around on your day-to-day lives.
Okay, so you're also opening up your business in the UAE. You're bringing this technology to the UAE as a company right now. Who are you talking to and what kind of people are you talking to in terms of installing it?
Yeah, so Pave is headquartered in London and we're now establishing our office in the UAE. And the great thing about the technology is it works anywhere that people walk. So think malls, think offices, future cities. And obviously there's a huge amount of development happening in this market. Schools, imagine all of the interactive places where people spend time, museums and entertainment spaces. So anywhere with their footsteps, there's a chance to harness that energy. We make energy fun, but we also have a way where you can store that energy during the day or at nighttime. So as people walk, the energy is accumulated in batteries, and then that is used to power lights or phone charging or other applications, whatever's needed. And it sounds like today what's needed is a better sensor network to understand what roads are open and how much flooding there is. And that can all be done using a step on our tile.
So okay, stop there. Did you just offer me a solution to tell me what roads are open or not? What could your technology do?
Yeah, so I think the great thing about PaveGen is it provides energy when and where you need it. Unlike solar that will get dirty, and obviously solar doesn't necessarily work very well in dense urban environments, but PaveGen kinetic energy floor tile can work anywhere. So theoretically, I know we've only had about 48 hours to prepare, but theoretically you could use that energy to power up a sensor network that would then upload the data to the cloud, so you could know where there's flooding and where there's disruption in another way that other technologies don't do. So that's just one example of what PaveGen could do in the kind of UAE market.
Right, so you could effectively put this under our roads and we'd get all that information.
Theoretically, yes. And that's what we're working on and we're developing further. And, our aim is to take it across every city, every town, every community, to have the chance to utilize this energy source that's all around us and reward people and reward vehicles, I guess, for driving or people walking.
20 seconds left with you. What kind of cost would we be talking to do that, though?
So as with any technology, there's always a cost as we scale up our production. We're on a really exciting upwards trajectory. We've just got VC backing. So at the moment, the cost base, it'll start in the tens of thousands of US dollars, and then it will reduce as we approach scale. So we're really looking for any partner to speak to around developers, malls, offices. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting in this product.
5 seconds, yes or no, is it waterproof?
100% waterproof. It'll work at the bottom of the sea.
Lawrence Kemble-Cook, CEO and founder of the smart flooring tech company PaveGen. A man we didn't expect to answer our question about the roads, but may have just done so.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.